You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. And today's episode, which is being dropped on the seventh day of August 2020, we're going to be talking to Gabrielle from Girl at the Game and Locked On Red Sox about, guess what? Well, she's currently in Massachusetts. We're talking Locked On Red Sox. See if you can figure it out. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. And during these weird and interesting times, and you're all staying safe, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Red Sox or Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. This show is on Google Podcasts. It's on Apple Podcasts. We're available on Twitter. You can follow us at Locked On MLB underscore net. We're at Instagram at Locked On MLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Well, I'm really happy to bring back friend of this podcast and also friend of the Bull Durham podcast and friend of baseball fans everywhere. As she is in Massachusetts, I am on the other side of the country in California. Gabrielle, how you doing?
I'm good, Sully. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, it feels a little strange having this abbreviated season and, it's so odd that because we're just having the last act that every game is like the equivalent of two or three games. And anytime you have a slight losing streak, it's like having a 2-week losing streak in a regular season. So for a team like the Red Sox, this has been about as bad a start as you could have in some ways because they've just stumbled out of the gate.
Did we really expect anything different, though?
Let's be honest.
I wrote about this on girlatthegame.com today. I literally said, I didn't expect much, but I didn't expect this. And the fact that each game counts for 2.7 games during a regular season makes it even more astonishing. It's the 13th time the Red Sox have won three or fewer of their first 11 games, most recently 2019, 2011, and 1996.
Man, and of course, a couple of those years, 2011, obviously, if they had won just two more games, or just one more game, actually, that they would have forced a one-game tie. If they won two more games, then they would have been a wild card team. But you can't scream at the moon about that because the collapse of 2011 led to 2012, which led to 2013. I think there's a direct line to that championship year in 2013. 96 was weird because if I'm just going by this memory that they had won the division in 95 with a surprising team. They weren't supposed to win the division that year. And they were clobbered by the Indians in the playoffs, but they went into the next season, and that was when Dan Duquette just could not stop tinkering with the team and just kept making little moves. Like every day, it seemed like there's a different five people on the roster, and they got off to such a rotten start. And like 2011, they had to play catch-up all season long, and they fell short of the wild card that year. But, man, I remember both of those years when you look back at when they were scrambling for a playoff spot at the end of the year, you're like, if you just weren't awful at the start, if you were merely bad instead of awful, it would have been a better time. But there's not enough time to re-scramble in this season. And that's part of the problem is that you only got 60 games. So if you stumble out, it's going to be, it's harder and harder to actually, reset.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that people often overlook or don't really understand is that it's a lot easier to start off strong, mm-hmm. kind of flounder a little bit in the middle, and then build yourself back up. But digging yourself out of a hole immediately, like they did last year, is a very difficult task. Overcoming your own losses is a very difficult task. And we saw that last year with this team when they started the season something like 2-9 on the road. And they never climbed out of that hole. They literally, I don't think they were ever closer than 4 games out of first.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, it's only April. Guess what? April games count the same way September games do. The difference is you would rather be winning in April and not having to try and dig yourself out of the hole that you created. Like the same thing I always say with bullpen pitchers, you don't have to dig yourself out of, work yourself out of a jam if you don't create one in the first place.
Easier said than done,
but it's true.
And we've seen some teams that in the past have gotten off to unbelievably great starts. I'm thinking specifically the Reds in 1990 got off, came out of the gate just like gangbusters. And you know, they won the division wire to wire, and they ultimately won the World Series. But after like the midway point of the season, they were only okay. Like the second half of the year, they were only okay. But they got off to such a fast start that the other teams couldn't catch up with them. And the same similar thing with the Tigers when they won the World Series in 1984. I mean, they just came bursting out of the gate. And the greatest example is the Atlanta Braves in 82. They won like I think their first 13 game or something crazy like that. And after that,
the Red Sox in 2018, 17-2.
Yeah. And that Braves team, after that winning streak, were a 500 team. And they won the division by one game or two games. It was like they won it on the last weekend of the season. And you look at that, and yes, there are teams that have come back. I mean, you just have to look at last year's Washington team, who after 60 games had a losing record. And actually, only the Marlins were worse than them in the National League. But we remember those teams because they are unusual, you know, and when you don't have the luxury of the first 102 games of the season like this year, the stumbling out is problematic. But I, like you alluded to, you don't have your ace in Chris Sale. You don't have your number two pitcher in Price because he's been traded away. You don't have Porcello, who wasn't great last year anyway. You've traded away Mookie Betts for a cinnamon stick. And you say, well, okay, so what are you looking for? Are we going to say, you know, you don't have the depth of the team that won the World Series just 18 months ago. And so what are the expectations? I mean, the management seems to not think that this is a team that's worth following or is it going to win piddly poo. So why should the fans think anything different?
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, at this point, I'm not even saying we're missing Chris Sale, the ace, because he's been hurt on and off for over a year now. I'm saying the Red Sox are without Eduardo Rodriguez for the whole year.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe forever. I mean, the guy has a heart condition now. That's not the kind of thing you take lightly. And we already knew coming into this season, you know, all right, like pre-COVID, it was Eduardo Rodriguez is your ace. Nathan Eovaldi is your number two. Hopefully he stays healthy, because the biggest thing with him is the guy's already had two Tommy Johns. He has a surgery almost every other season, knock on wood. And that's his biggest problem, is his health. When he's healthy, he's on fire. But when he's not healthy, I mean, you're screwed. Then COVID hits. Chris Sale goes on the injured list and has the Tommy John he probably should have had last summer. Then Eduardo Rodriguez gets COVID, comes back, is diagnosed with viral myocarditis, done for the whole season. And I knew that was coming the second they said that he had it. I was like, they're not going to mess with a heart condition with a young guy. Yeah. That's not, you can't do that. That's the kind of thing fans will never forgive, if you push a guy with a heart condition. And so now it's literally Nathan Eovaldi, Martin Perez, who was good last night, but I mean, a lot of that was just luck.
Yeah.
And then whoever the hell else they've got cooking, you know, whoever's awake, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's just a pile of warm bodies, and they're just picking whoever pitched the least and the most in the last couple of days. And you can't build a team like that. You can't build any kind of winning team when your starting rotation is at most two regular starters and then whoever the hell is available.
Well, so if their goal is to get under the luxury tax threshold, then congratulations and raise that banner. There were those two things, and I'm not trying to say I told you so on this, but I did remember being on the podcast and saying after the 2018 World Series, the Old Sully Baseball podcast, saying that after the 2018 World Series, I was saying trade Sale because you got everything you wanted out of him and you knew that he was going to break down. You knew it was going to happen. When they signed to the extension, I said, this is going to bite us. This is going to bite the team. And after Eovaldi, you know, single-handedly was the pitching star and hero of the postseason that year. And everything he did, either out of the bullpen or out of the rotation, no offense to Price and his wonderful World Series. But, you know, Eovaldi, you know, pitched his guts out. But we all knew the injury history he had. He didn't pitch at all in 2017. We saw when he was with the Yankees, he was a very talented pitcher, but just couldn't stay healthy on the roster. And to give him a big contract and to give Sale the big contract, look, it's not my money, but you look up and you go like, did that prevent them from sealing up Mookie Betts? And if that's the case, which I personally find nonsense, they have enough money to sign all of them. But I don't care much about, you know, the money and everything. It's not my money and everything. And I let the players get whatever they want. I get worried about when you tie up tons of contract space to two players who you knew were going to get hurt. And, I mean, that cost Dombrowski his job, but did it cost us? Did it cost, you know, Red Sox fans the having Mookie Betts for the foreseeable future?
Cost me my sanity.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the thing with the Mookie thing is my theory, which is mostly based in fact, you know, after 2018 World postseason, Dombrowski goes and offers Mookie a low ball extension, 7 years, something like $220 million.
Yeah.
Mookie is understandably like, go screw yourself. I'm the reigning American League MVP, American League batting champion, gold glove, silver slugger, World Series champ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until the cows come home. And you're offering me 7 years, $220 million when I just brought you your fourth championship in 15 years. Like, what are you doing? So Dombrowski says, okay. Mookie says, I'm testing free agency. Dombrowski hears that. He goes, all right, well, if this guy is determined to test free agency, which I only think he really said because of the lowball offer, or mostly because of the lowball offer, Dombrowski says, all right, well, I guess I have some cash to burn, and extends Sale and Eovaldi. And gives Steve Pierce a one-year deal, which, I mean, it was like $6 million. People need to get over that. It's for the Red Sox, that's a penny in a bucket. Like, who cares?
There are no bad one-year deals. Even if he didn't show up at all, that was his reward for being a World Series.
Reward for having three home runs in one game against the Yankees in August. Like, who cares? Whatever. And, it's $6 million for the Red Sox.
I have no compunction of giving Eovaldi a one-year deal afterwards either. One-year deal, if for no other reason than to say, hey, we know what you lay everything out on the line, the won a championship, here you go. But to say, here's a multi-year deal.
Right.
For pitching,
I don't know if you've heard this. I'm sure you have. But Trevor Bauer's thing is that he wants only one-year deals for his entire career. And his thinking is this. If I'm on a team where I'm not good, that team can trade me to a championship team for whatever they want for the postseason run after, you know, the trade deadline. And then I can help a team get that next level to go to the postseason and maybe both of us win a World Series. And if it doesn't work out, I'm a free agent again, and it keeps him motivated to do his best every single year. So he's not like falling into a Chris Davis-esque situation with the Orioles where he kind of played really well in his contract year. And I honestly think that that's it doesn't work for everyone. And most people, especially pitchers, are not crazy enough to do it. We saw it with Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
You know, they want the security because pitching is definitely the riskiest part of playing the game. But I do love it in a way, because it is so tenacious of Trevor Bauer to just be like, I want to prove myself every single year. I want to be on a World Series championship team every single year. I want to do this. It is smart and it's creative and it's gutsy and I like it. And I think that Nathan Eovaldi, they could have done a one-year deal or at most a two-year deal. Give him a high salary, but like a short-term deal so that at the very least, you're not Pablo Sandovaling yourselves for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And with Chris Sale, I mean, he pitched like two games between July and September or October of 2018. One of them was a rehab start against the Orioles where Cora was so mean to the Orioles, he literally came out during the press conference and said, we're not having him do a AAA game because we're just going to have him pitch against the Orioles. And he struck out something like 14 Orioles in five innings. And that was his only game before the postseason or the end of September or something.
Yeah.
And then he was okay in the postseason, but he was definitely not the best part of the Sox rotation. It was David Price and Nathan Eovaldi.
Right. And let's not sleep on Porcello as well, who pitched.
No, Porcello was great. And yeah. good relief appearances too. I think the Red Sox staff combined for over 13 innings of relief work, the starters.
Yeah.
Which also speaks to the fragility of the bullpen. Even then, because a lot of people didn't see this because the Red Sox were winning games, and you know, it's a team sport, so it's cumulative. You see the win-loss column, and what matters is in the win column. And the Red Sox won 108 regular season games. But what I've been saying since literally mid-summer 2018 is the only reason this bullpen isn't a problem is because the 2018 starting rotation was so dominant that they were going 7, 8, 9 innings every single game. The bullpen was underworked and they were barely necessary. And by the time a lot of them came in, the Red Sox had such an enormous lead that it didn't really matter if they gave up a couple runs. I mean, Craig Kimbrell's numbers between 2017 and 2018, his walks per nine quadrupled. And you look at that and you're like, okay, that would be a problem. And in the postseason, Cora knew it because he was using his starters as relievers for over 13 innings of work. And you don't see that if you're confident in your bullpen. No. And here we are now. Dombrowski did nothing about the bullpen after Kelly and Kimbrell left. He got Colton Brewer, congratulations. And then this year, you know, they didn't spend any money. So you have what you have. You're lucky Brandon Workman was even as good as he was last year. You're lucky Matt Barnes is 50% not a nightmare. And other than that, you got what you paid for or didn't pay for, which is pitching.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. The Red Sox did not do the proper maintenance on the team. I think we can all agree on that. Just like a lot of times I need help doing the proper maintenance for my car. Now, let me tell you something. I used to go to like chain stores, but you know what, Gabrielle, are you aware that they have different price tiers for professional mechanics and people like us who are just noodling with our car?
I am aware. I'm also not happy about how dumb I feel when I go into one of those stores because I'm not always sure what I need.
No. Do what you should do.
I almost never know what I need.
Forget the stores. What you need to do is you need to go to rockauto.com because their prices are the same for everybody and they're reliably low. They have the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. And rockauto.com is for everybody. Don't worry about a membership. Don't worry about account login. The catalog is unique and the rockauto.com catalog is easy to navigate. It's for people like us who aren't big car people. You quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, choose the brands, specifications, and the price you prefer. Listen to me, Gabrielle, listen to me. If you learn nothing else today, you're going to listen to me right now. Write this down, rockauto.com. And see all the parts available for your car or for your truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Now, what are you doing for dinner later?
I don't know, but I'm always thinking about what I'm going to eat before I eat it.
I hear you. I'm the same way. And do you know what? In this time, and I love to support some of my local restaurants because you can't go out the way you normally do. There's a barbecue place here in Pasadena that makes the best fish and chips. That, for me, fish and chips, that's my thing. That's my
thing. Well, I'm a Cape Cod girl. You know I love fish and chips.
Well, you know, if we order fish and chips, what we should do? What do you think we should use if we order fish and chips?
I always use Postmates.
I use Postmates too.
And who doesn't use Postmates?
Well, and everyone smart uses Postmates. And given what's going on, I can get food delivered without leaving the house or even opening the door. They've created non-contact deliveries. So now when I order my fish and chips from the local restaurant, everything gets left right outside the door. They have Postmates Pickup, which I can use to order takeout from my favorite restaurants. And you need to be supporting your restaurants at this time. And it's not just fish and chips, not just burgers, not just sushi. They actually have made my life easier by picking anything I need from Walgreens or 7-Eleven. If I said I needed that Cherry Coke Slurpee yesterday, they drop it off right outside my door. It's very easy to do, Gabrielle. Do you know how you do it?
I'm going to guess you use the Postmates app from the App Store or Android Store, because that's what I use. I just go on my phone. I don't even use my computer.
That's right. And you do that, you get anything you want within the hour. Listen, folks, for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Now, Gabrielle, I think you know this, and I know my listeners do, that this year is a bittersweet year for my Red Sox fandom, that I just don't feel connected with the team anymore. I don't feel connected with New England sports fans anymore. And that's why I've been following the Mariners. It's a strange year, so I said, I'm going to try something different this year. Now, who knows? Maybe next year I'll come running right back to the Red Sox. But I've said that the New England fan has evolved into a species that I don't recognize. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just I personally don't feel a connection to it anymore. I don't feel like, you know, the last time I lived in Massachusetts, Ronald Reagan was president. And the last time I lived in New England at all was in 1994 when I lived with my cousin in Connecticut. And I was closer to New York anyway. And so when I see that New England sports fans are the type that expect a championship or nothing, that there's a certain entitlement almost to it that I don't recognize, and that, you know, that there's, I mean, there's almost a spoiled element to it. I'm not saying I want to go back to losing or I miss the curse of the Bambino or anything like that. What I am saying is what it's turned into is something that I don't recognize and I don't relate too much. And I also am getting tired of the management, even though they've won several World Series and everything like that. The management always does something that makes me facepalm. And I just feel like, you know what, why am I emotionally attached to this team that I, you know, I've been in Boston for a grand total of 1 week since 2004. So tell me your thoughts of the state of Red Sox fandom and your thoughts on what the New England sports fan has become really since the turn of this century.
Hold on, Saul. I'm just waiting for this dog in someone's yard to stop barking because I don't want it to mess up your sound.
All right.
All right, I think we're good. Honestly, you know, as usual, you and I are kind of on the same page about this. I would never want us to go back to pre-2004, which obviously was a lot more of your life than it was mine. But I do come from a third-generation Boston family, and I have an 102-year-old great-uncle who was born in June 1918 and lived 86 years without seeing a real World Series that he could actually remember, not as an infant. I would never want us to go back to that, but there was something bittersweet, kind of heartachingly beautiful, like a romantic Romeo and Juliet-esque, like love, like unrequited love kind of thing going on, where the Red Sox would almost win, but they never did. And once it happened, I remember thinking, well, things are never going to be the same again. And it's true, because unless they wait another 86 years, God forbid, to win a World Series now, it's never going to be the same. I mean, they've won 4 in 15 years. They have the most in this millennium. And between that and the Patriots and the Celtics and the Bruins, this city, our cup overfloweth with winning. And fans went from being crazy passionate losers to crazy passionate winners. And when that happens with people who are as psychotic about sports as Boston fans, you know that there's going to be a little bit of a toxicity to it with a lot of people, where our standards are high now. And, you know, to an extent, it makes sense. But there is also definitely a need for humbling. And I said that last year. I was like, do we realize, like, there are Indians fans who haven't seen a World Series since 1948? Like, we need, like, Red Sox fans need to shut up. And I've said it myself, too. I'm like, my biggest thing now is I just don't want them to embarrass themselves, because my feeling is, you know that you're better than this. And this is what I wrote on Girl at the Game today. I said, my standards after last night's game, when they proved that they could actually shut out a baseball team, and a good team at that, because the Rays are not supposed to be terrible.
No, the Rays are supposed to be a good team.
And they shut them out, and it was their first shutout of the season, because in 9 games, they have allowed 5 or more runs, which is just, okay, gross. This team proved last night that they can be better than they have been. And I'm not saying they're going to be a World Series team, or even a postseason team, or even a 500 team. But the way that they have been playing has been embarrassing. And there's a difference between thinking that they deserve to win a World Series every year, because they don't, and just thinking that they are playing like absolute ass, which for the most part, a lot of them have been. And I mean, that's just part of being a Boston fan. But I hear you, because for me, I wasn't even sure if I was going to be happy when baseball came back this year. I was worried about the pandemic. You and I have talked about this a lot. I was worried about Eduardo Rodriguez. I was worried about having no pitching, no Mookie, no Brock. I have really hated the ownership over the last year. But when it came back, I was like, all right, here I go. I haven't felt the same emotions that I usually do. I think a lot of that comes from not being able to go to the ballpark, because, you know, Fenway Park is such a special place to take in a game. I also think that after last year, it was very frustrating to be covering the Red Sox, because so many games, it just felt like they weren't even trying. And you go from being the World Series team that wins a franchise record 108 wins and bulldozes their way through the playoffs to a 2019 season that just felt so frustrating. Like every 5 minutes, it seemed like they were finally going to catch on, and they never did. And then the whole offseason was cheating, Cora, trades, no Brock Holt, pandemic. And you're like, well, this is just, it sucks. I mean, there's not been a lot to be happy about as a Red Sox fan. And I don't expect fans of other franchises to feel bad for Red Sox fans, per se. But I will say that it really drives me nuts when fans of other teams act like fans have any say or control over what their team does. Because there were fans of other teams, like the Dodgers fans were miserable when they got Mookie. And I was like, do you think we had anything to do with this? This was not up to us at all. When you become a fan of a sports team, you are strapping yourself into a ride where somebody else is driving. And that is it. You are just along for the ride, for good or for bad. You're just there. You're along for the ride.
I'll tell you what the tipping point for me was, and I talked about this in a previous episode, but I had an exchange with a younger Boston sports fan. And he was one who was saying, I don't understand why these older Red Sox fans talk so much about 1967, 1975, and 1986, or even more in Magic of 88. They all lost. And I explained to this guy, I said, look, all of Red Sox fandom, what we consider to be Red Sox Nation, can be traced back to the 1967 pennant. That's when Red Sox fandom really caught back on again. That's when people
That's when my dad became a fan.
Yeah, it was they hadn't contended for a generation. There was talk of bulldozing Fenway Park. There was talk about moving to a multi-purpose stadium in the suburbs. And suddenly people fell back in love with Fenway. They fell in love with Yaz. And that was why that team meant so much. The 75 World Series meant so much to baseball because it was a big wake-up call. It was a reminder to everyone of why baseball was so great. And for people of my generation, the 86 team was our first playoff team. You know, they hadn't been in the playoffs in 11 years. And it was also our first taste of what being a Red Sox fan was like, the great players and the gut punch. And I said, then for emotionally, that's what those teams meant. And with players who you loved and everything, I explained it to him. And his response was just, L. And I said, are you telling me that all the things the 67 Red Sox did, and that was a team that played before I was even born, but all the things that they did, reestablishing the fan base, making a love affair with Fenway Park, making people fall back in love with the Red Sox, all that is invalid because they lost Game 7 of the World Series. And he wrote back, yes, that year's a loss, worthless.
How old is this guy?
Oh, and I asked him. I said, how old are you? He said, I'm
26. I'm 12.
He said, I'm 26.
Okay, I'm 27. I'm not that stupid.
Well, but that 1 year of wisdom you have has been a lot.
I'm also a woman, so the age differential there is actually about 15 years.
So this is a guy who was born in 1994, and if you use what I call the rule of seven, that your sports memories start to form when you're around 7 years old, his coincided perfectly with the Vinatieri field goal to win the Super Bowl. So since he was a kid, since he was a 7 or 8 year old kid, he has seen Patriots pile up Super Bowls, Red Sox pile up Super Bowls, or the Celtics winning one and going to the finals, and the Bruins doing the same. And so his expectations are that of you win it or you go home. And I'm not saying to go back to any sort of glorious puritanical BS of flogging yourself in pain. I'm not for that. But there has to be a gray area between woe was me and not seeing the value of a team that took you all the way to Game 7 of the World Series.
By that guy's logic, Ted Williams doesn't matter to franchise history. So no. That's moronic. I mean, the amount of good teams, think about how hard it is to even get to the World Series, the amount of luck, the amount of good health, the amount of victories that you need just to even reach the postseason, let alone the World Series. I mean, it's only one team from each league. To say that it's not a valiant effort to even get to the postseason, I mean, it takes a lot of work. It's 162 goddamn games. That is insane. Think about how many great people he is devaluing by saying that.
Yeah. And the bounces here or there, obviously you can point to 86, but I'm doing this writing project about the 72 postseason. A bounce here or there, a blown call here or there, a pop-up instead of a ball hooks foul that doesn't go foul. You know, all these things can happen.
Buckner.
And I find Buckner to be an overrated error because the game was already tied at that point. You know, like Mookie Wilson fouled off 5,000 pitches with two strikes.
Yeah. If he and when that happens, you know what's happening.
And if he had been a little bit earlier, a little bit later on any of those foul balls, like popped up to Spike Owen or something, does that now mean that Bill Buckner was a great player? I mean,
Buckner was a good player.
He was, but
and he's only remembered for that one moment.
And what I'm just saying is that I feel now, of course, this one guy I was corresponding with is just one meathead, of course, but I'm looking at that going, is this what the new generation of sports fan in Boston has become, and has someone from my generation look like a woolly mammoth stuck in ice that I could be wax poetic about the Morgan Magic Red Sox of 1988? And that's really sort of moved me away from Red Sox fandom a little bit to say, well, maybe I don't relate to this fan base anymore. I certainly am not going to move back. I'm probably going to live on the West Coast the rest of my life. And so I have this affinity for the Northwest, not just because I got my graduate degree from Washington State, but I love the Northwest. But there's also a sense of, well, what's the next highest mountain to climb? and challenge as a fan. And well, I took the one team that's never played in the World Series, the only franchise to never play in the World Series. And that's the Mariners. So I said, well, this year I'm going to follow them and see what happens. And that's what I did.
Well, I love that for you. I mean, I've been saying this since the winter, that one of the things I have enjoyed about this time when the Red Sox have not been good since the start of last season has been getting to enjoy other teams. And the pleasure of taking in a baseball game when my heart still belongs to the Red Sox, but I can appreciate good baseball without the added baggage of extreme psychosis that comes with being a Red Sox fan. Because if I watch like a Blue Jays Marlins game, for example, in this year where the divisions basically, the leagues basically just play each other with reckless abandon, I can just enjoy Bo Bichette. I can cheer for the Marlins. I can cheer for the Blue Jays. And I don't really have a horse in the game, a horse in the race, but it's great baseball. And I'm enjoying baseball. And I'm not living and dying in every pitch. And Matt Barnes isn't making me tear out my hair. And it's great. And I encourage that of other people. Because you know what? When you get too deep into Red Sox Nation, it's like fever pitch when Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore break up. And he's sitting in his underwear with the chicken wings watching the Carl Yastrzemski videotape. And his friends come over and they're like, oh my God, he is so far gone. And I feel like I kind of hit that place less disgustingly than Jimmy Fallon, but you kind of reach a point where you're like, wow, I am way too invested in this and I kind of need to get out of my head. And I loved going to Dodgers games last summer in LA because I didn't really care if the Dodgers won or lost, but it was amazing baseball.
Yeah. And it's been amazing having you on this show. So Gabrielle, tell people where they can follow you in the world of podcasting and everything.
So you can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1 and at Girl at the Game. The Girl at the Game podcast is available on Apple, Spotify, Libsyn, pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts. I also host Locked On Red Sox, which Sully will be on this week as my guest because Turnabout is fair play. And I also host the Nickelodeon Again Rewatch podcast, which is a podcast dedicated to the greatest Nickelodeon TV shows and cartoons of the 90s and early 2000s. And our newest episode, dedicated to the first episode ever of SpongeBob SquarePants, dropped today on Apple and Spotify. So if you're a Nickelodeon fan, check that out as well.
God, I am so much older than you. It's unbelievable. But we are of different generations, and yet we can still talk baseball with this greatness. And it's been so much fun having you on. Follow us on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and all the places you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend. Follow baseball as long as we still have baseball. Let's have fun watching it. This has been Locked On MLB for the 7th day of August 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.